Welcome to FemLead, the podcast on female leadership and role models. Prepare to feel inspired and better equipped to navigate your career path. I am Alexandra Chabotaru, your host, and together with my guests, we will tackle a new field of work in each episode. The aim of this podcast is to deep dive into career perspectives and strategies to navigate your desired path for success. Enjoy! Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of FemLead Podcast. There are times in life when you are given amazing opportunities, and this is one of those moments. Many of you are reaching out privately, saying that the interviews I share really inspire you. Well, today, I'm taking this journey to the next level. My next guest is no other than Simone Mene, a powerhouse, notably known as the former CFO for Lufthansa. She started her career for ITT, later joining Deutsche Lufthansa in 1989. In 2012, Simone Mene was appointed the Chief Financial Officer and stayed in this position until 2015. She worked as the Chief Financial Officer at Boehringer Ingelheim from 2016 to 2017, entering a new industry. In both companies, she was responsible for the foundation of the Digital Lab. Today, Simone Mene serves as non-executive board member for BMW, Henkel, Deutsche Post DHL, Johnson Controls International, and she owns an art gallery in Kiel, Germany. It's really an honor to introduce our next guest here at Family Podcast. Welcome, Simone. It's really an honor to have you here.
Alexandra, I'm so happy that you invited me, and I'm looking forward to our talk.
It's really exciting because we were introduced through the members of my network. And when I was given this opportunity, I was like, what do we even discuss? Because there's so many different angles that we could touch upon. But after discussing with you in our intro call, we agreed to inspire and to discuss about societal changes, anything that you might have to share from your career path that you think will help others that are either in a corporate trajectory or they're thinking about their career path. Mm-hmm. But before we go into that, I want to mention the fact that we are both podcasters. And for the last year, you've been doing a podcast called The Boss. And I wanted to give the opportunity to share a bit about what the podcast is about. I know it's in German, and I know you also have female role models as guests in your podcast.
Yeah, the boss is playing a little bit with the word boss, which means the same in German as it does in English. But D means this is a female version. So I invite women who are in a top position in their area. That could mean scientists, that I had the boss of the police in Berlin, which is a very interesting job, of course. I recently talked to Belén Garijo, who will be the first CEO in the DAX in Germany. Normally I talk about their career, and very often they tell me that it was not straightforward. So sometimes, for example, Belén Garijo said she wanted to be a medicine, but then there was no opportunity to do that after her studies, and she started in pharmaceuticals. Or I talked to Ursula von der Leyen, who is now the commissioner in the European Parliament, and she was a medicine when she started and not a politician at all. So I think that is inspiring for the listeners, female as well as male, to see that there are no boundaries. You'd have to take risks, you have to be open, but also our top role models did face some circumstances where they did not feel comfortable, and they overcame that.
Definitely. I think this is the main message for anybody hearing any inspiring story. It was not a linear path for sure. And even if it sounds like you just had all the opportunities laid in front of you, it was probably not like that. It was probably a set of actions that took you in that direction. And, you know, because your podcast is focused on interviewing female leaders and understanding more about their field of work, your narrative speaks about women in leadership. And in some of the interviews that I've seen with you, you bring to the table the fact that we don't have enough women in leadership, and this is something that we should discuss more. You talk about diversity and inclusion. Can you please share with us why embracing diversity is important?
Yeah, I love that topic. So please interrupt me when I speak too long. So, the world is diverse. The world is diverse because we have people from several gender, not only male and female. We have people from different background, different color. We have people who started poor and became rich, who are rich and started poor. We have people with family. We have singles. I don't have to continue. So every company and every environment is diverse. And I think for politics, as well as for companies, it is important to show that diversity, because their staff is diverse or their voters are diverse, and they need to take different perspective to really also serve their customers the right way, because also their customers are diverse. So I think you need a diverse team to do the right things for a sustainable future for a company, or also for a sustainable future in politics.
Definitely. You talk as well about the fact that we have this quota in some companies, and I've covered the diversity and inclusion topic a month ago for a full episode. And some of the actions that are being taken by large companies or different investment funds that say, if you don't have women, or if you don't have a diverse team founding this company, we will not invest. What do you think about quotas and how they are perceived in different parts of the world?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic, because the last podcast I made with Belén Garijo was exactly about that. I was pro-quota, and I actually joined Public Action in Germany, and Belén is against it, because she says it's a positive discrimination, and she's against discrimination. But we share the same topic. The topic is we need female leadership. And what she did in her career and in her last job in Merck was to come to female leadership of 30%. So she said, I didn't need a quota. But what I said is, well, if you have a top leader who is embracing female leadership, who is embracing diversity like you do and your CEO do, then of course it's easy. You can do that. But if you have a company where the male leadership thinks or has as a stereotype that females are not good leaders, a quota will help, because that brings female into the view, that brings females into the position, and then sooner or later, you will find out that females can be as good as leaders as male, and you get a sort of normality. And hopefully, on the long run, we do not need quota anymore.
Mm-hmm. So it is a matter of context as well, because like you said, there are definitely unconscious biases and we keep discussing them. So this is not pointing out something that is not known. So there are different ways of managing that for the mm-hmm. better. And that is could take the form of quotas in this case that we are discussing here. So just making yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quota alone will not be the recipe, because normally it is the stereotype you have, but it's also maybe the environment, which is especially difficult in Germany. You have some social pressure on females who work and have kids at the same time. You have some tax reasons why very often couples decide that only one will work, because it's favorable if the female, very often earning less money, stops working. And you have not as good solutions for kids in school as well as in kindergarten as you have in some other countries. So there is a lot of areas where things can become better to sponsor female leadership.
Yeah. When it comes to influencing your career, because you now interview female role models and you influence many other people's careers. Who inspired you? What was the inspiration for your career story? Who were your mentors maybe?
Well, I have not the one mentor. I had a good start because my role model was my mother, because she was always working. So I had a working mom, and I always felt very comfortable with that. And again, Belén Garijo, her daughter gave a TED talk saying the best thing what happened to her was to have a career mom. Because there are obviously studies that with a career mom, the daughters also get easier with a career and get paid more. So the fact that my mother was always working, and that also my both grandmothers were quite strong females, because during the war they had to raise everything for their family on their own. I think I got that in my education, that female can do it. Therefore I was very, I had a high health self-esteem already in school. And that is a sort of a circle. When you have a self-esteem as a kid and you behave like that, others will trust you, and then you continue to build up your self-esteem. So I had no real mentor. I had some female politicians, which I found quite good, or there was a female owner of a German weekly magazine, and she was very impressive. So there were some females I found strong, but in general there was no clear mentor.
I think representation, like you said, and seeing somebody else doing it, it's really core to the way others' paths can develop. And some of the feedback I receive, it's about the fact that, you know, I never thought that I can build a career in learning and development and develop the team myself, because there was always somebody else who had the say. And when I shared one of the interviews I had in the beginning, a lot of people told me that it's great to see that this woman moved across the continent. She went to Africa and she built there an entire infrastructure by herself, of course, with the help of the team, because it means I can do it in other organizations too. And that is core to, you know, promoting role models.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much for covering that. If we have women listening that say, okay, you both are quite confident from what I see in this video, you interview each other and you talk about your career paths, and they don't have the confidence to go for it and say, you know what, today I'm going to change my life and I'm going to try to make a plan and see how I can do it. What do you tell women who do not have this confidence of thinking that they can do it too?
Well, I think every woman has a strength somewhere. And when I see some mothers organizing the life of the family, I tell them, you are so great in logistics, yeah, to really cover when does what kid, which kid has to go to school, when is another arrangement, when is the birthday party, whatever, when do I do the shopping. This is a skill. Another thing is some may be very good in music, or singing in a chorus. Normally, it's a skill to be good in singing in a chorus, or even work in a chorus, to all bring them to sing together to finally have a good result. So there are hidden skills which some people are not aware, especially females, normally don't take it so serious. They say, oh, that's nothing. Oh, no, I'm really not skilled. And I think you have to find out where you are good in. And you have to foster that. And you can foster that in different areas. So when you are a good trainer for sport, you can be good as a motivator, as a leader. You can handle people. If you are good in communication because you can good explain, again, you can be a very good leader, because it's important to communicate to your team what is important. To find out where you are good in, where you can be proud of, and use that as the basis, as the foundation to build up your career. Of course, there is sometimes the problem, and that is valid for male as for female, that during their childhood, they were suffering from either parents or teachers who were not building up their self-esteem, but destroying it. And that is, of course, the worst thing people can do to kids. That is more difficult if you have faced a childhood like that than having a childhood where people were fostering your skills. But still, sometimes you also can use that position to say, I will show them. They didn't believe in me, but I will show them. A good friend of mine, she was suffering from a strong mother who was always saying, your brother is good, but you are stupid. And she had no self-esteem. And she then started as a nurse, not meaning that nurse is not something great, but she's now a professor in medicine on her way up. Yeah. But she just didn't dare to think about studying because of her mother. But now she's in a position saying, I show it to her. Yeah. Also, you can use maybe this kind of your story to build up a career if you want to. Mm. And also, on the other hand, let's face it, not everybody has to make a career. Yeah. I think for male or for female, it's also very, very good if you are just happy with a normal life and your family. Sometimes it's even better because the board members I have been, there was not much of a private life. There was a problem to actually do sport. There was a problem to really fostering my old friends. And I wouldn't say, for me, it wasn't a sacrifice, but some people are not happy with that. So it's absolutely okay to say, I want to have a good job where I'm happy with, where I can bring in all I want, but I still want time for my friends and my family, and therefore I will not be in top management.
Definitely. Thank you for also covering that. The idea of, having to do something, but you're not being happy with it. It's really not something I'm trying to share either. And I feel, maybe trying it out and seeing if it is for you. It's the first step before saying, oh, I failed because I never got there. Yeah. Well, did you created that situation where it was what you really wanted? If it was not, then maybe it's for the better.
Yeah.
So that's really where we wanted to get.
Very important message, yes.
Looking back, now that you interview role models yourself, you've had an amazing career that we're going to go right into in a few seconds. Would you have done something differently, that in the sense of taking decisions maybe with a different mindset or sometimes looking at things a bit differently?
Well, the one thing I say was going more boldly into conflict situations. So I was shying away at the beginning of my career from conflict. And so when you, for example, had a team member and I was not happy with the performance, I was shy to say, I'm not happy with your performance and I think you need to do this and this. So I tried to either be polite or did shy away even to say so. And said, yes, it's absolutely okay what you're doing. So this person went out and said, yeah, it's absolutely okay what I'm doing. And I was not happy because I said, well, I didn't bring the message. And normally it's better for both if you are transparent and speak up and say, I'm not happy with that. And you don't have to accuse a person and it's not finger pointing, but you make clear what your expectations are. So in that case, I should have made clear what my expectations are, why I'm not happy. And maybe the answer of that team member would have been, well, actually, you never told me that I shall do it. Or actually, I don't have the training to do that. Or I do not don't have the instruments to do it. So I could have helped the person to develop. And instead of that, I was shying away. So that is one thing I would definitely change as a young team leader, looking back to that time?
Well, that's exactly what we're here to do in this interview, to focus on wherever you are in your path, look for those situations that you want to change and do it now. So you have this reflection. So thanks a lot for sharing that reflection with us. I'm going to step into the career path part of our interview. It's really an honor to talk about it with you, because now I get to confirm firsthand what I saw online and you know, all of the amazing things you've done. But I do want to share with the audience a bit of your background, so we start directly from talking about the leadership part of your career. So from 1999 to 2004, Simone was responsible for commercial administration and human resources, initially for the Southwestern Europe region until 2001, and later for Europe as a whole. From 2004 to 2010, Simone was in charge of finance and accounting at Lufthansa Technik. In 2010, Simone switched to the former LH subsidiary British Midland as chief financial officer and accompanied their sale to the International Airlines Group. In 2012, Simone was appointed chief financial officer of Deutsche Lufthansa, becoming the first female chief financial officer of a DAX group, the most important German stock index. In your function, you defended the need for quotas for women in management positions. So this is to underline your career. Your career as a CFO is absolutely incredible, but I would be curious to understand directly from you, what is it that you see as key accomplishments in your life?
Ooh. Well, to be honest, of course, I'm very, very proud that I have been a CFO in the DAX. And that was the biggest step. And that did change the most in my life, because I have been a CFO, and because I have been the first female CFO, I had a lot of advantages. I could meet a lot of people which I would have never met before, and have access to information and to people from all areas, scientists as well as artists as well as people from business. So I think that was the biggest achievement when I look into my career. I think, again, career is not the only thing. Of course, there are achievements in the private life. I'm not married. I have no kids. My best friend had no career, but has three wonderful kids and a wonderful husband. So we were always looking at each other and say, okay, what is the better part of life? Yeah. And then whenever I was traveling the world and we were together in Barcelona or New York, she was saying, oh, you have such a great life. And it's so jet setter, whatever. And I said, yeah, but you have such great kids. So my achievement in private life is, I think that I take good care of my parents and now my mother. And you shall never forget that this is also part of a life.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that. In one of your interviews, you've shared, don't stop when you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. People asked you when you left Lufthansa, why are you leaving Lufthansa? You've mentioned that after your studies, every 3 to 5 years, you moved within Lufthansa for 27 years and then left Lufthansa and now moving into a new part of your career. When did you know that your career is going towards leadership?
Oh, that was quite early. My second job in Lufthansa was a leadership position, and that was in 1991, when I went to Nigeria, and I had a team of 13 people, and I've never been an expert. I've never been good in school in a certain area. I've never been good in my studies in a certain area. I'm quite mediocre if you look at my degrees, but I've always been a leader in school. In sport, so I think I'm good in leadership, and I'm good in mediating, so taking the experts and take their message and combine that with a target a team or a company has, and explain and communicate to the employees what is important, and at the same time to explain to the top of the company what is feasible and what is not feasible. So leadership was always part of me. I would say starting in kindergarten, to be very honest. That's my education, or somewhere in my DNA, that started early.
And looking a bit on your growth path from being a graduate to moving up to the top rank of leadership, let's talk about the first years, and let's communicate now with our listeners that are graduates or that are about to graduate or are in the first, let's say, 5-7 years of their careers. What do you recommend them when they look at their career very ambitiously, or just looking at their career, maybe a bit confused, like, is this the right thing for me now that I've started to work? And I know from my experience that when I got my first job, I also became a team lead when I graduated. And I was a bit confused. I was like, well, am I now a grown-up? Is this it? What's happening from now on? And is there any advice that you would share to graduates or young professionals who are interested to knowing, you know, what are some of your learnings from that part of your career?
I think it's very, very normal that you have a lot of questions, especially on the first job. Because everything is new. And if the first job is a leadership job, then it's even more. I started in a project team of internal audit and ITT. And actually, I stopped there after 3 years because I thought there is no plan for my career in ITT. And when I resigned, they were surprised and said, oh, God, we have so many plans with you. And I said, well, you never told me, and therefore I go to Lufthansa now. So I think a good advice would be, and I think that's, you know, for me, that's 30 years ago. A lot of young people do that now, but ask, are there any plans? Is there any development? What will be the next step? What would be a further education in your company? So in this regard, you show that you are interested in having a plan and a career, but at the same time, you also learn, is the company really caring about you as a talent, and do they have plans with you? And if they don't have, and if you have the feeling, well, they just put you there and everything else will be luck, then you better look for another job. So I think that would be the first thing. The second thing is, never think that youth is a disadvantage. Older people tend to say, oh, yes, when I had your age, I was also so impatient. I had also this strange technical ideas. But just wait, you will learn. And so they are very generous, so-called. But at the same time, this generosity stops you. And I think that what we need is a good mix between young people being impatient and want to change things and want to use new tools, and maybe experienced people saying, okay, let's look into this. I see some risk, but let's give it a trial. So never believe when people are saying you are too young, because that's just not true. And it changed in our generation, because maybe I'm a baby boomer. The baby boomers are so many that they feel so strong, and they are still there. Yeah, and you may not believe it, but sometimes they feel maybe scared by young people because they are not so good in technology. So use your youth to tell them there is new developments, but obviously don't make their fault and taking youth as a enter ticket for everything. Yeah, so we need the balance.
Definitely. And you've actually illustrated one example when you wanted to move the digital lab of Lufthansa from Berlin to another smaller city, but that was the head office for Lufthansa, if I'm not mistaken. And you've mentioned that it was a challenge to attract talent, or you thought it would be a challenge to attract young talent to move in this smaller city. In the end, you've mentioned that there were a lot of people who joined because of the mission. But do you think that there are some maybe characteristics of younger generations that we should really be aware of when we look at the workforce? Because you've worked with so many different people, and I'm sure that you've seen some changes throughout the years.
Yeah, actually, that was Boehringer Ingelheim. The Lufthansa lab we put into Berlin because that was just what everybody said. You have to go to Berlin because there you have the young talents, you have good exchange and whatever. So everybody had a lab in Berlin. And when we wanted to open the lab in Boehringer Ingelheim, we said it should be here. Because the people have to have the contact and the knowledge about what we are doing here in Ingelheim. And Ingelheim is a small town. And it's in the middle of Germany, some 60 kilometers from Frankfurt. So we really had some question marks. Can we get the right people? But the mission and the purpose we were talking about was digital health. So what does new technology with health data mean to patients? And what good can we do either to heal some sicknesses, some diseases, or how to develop drugs faster or cheaper? And that attracted a lot of young talents. So I think the purpose is more important than the location. And obviously, as we see nowadays, you do not even need a location. But I think sometimes you need to meet as a team. I think it is quite important to have a home base. The advantage of young people is obviously curiosity and openness to new things. And if you have people who, and in some companies that happened, you know, people grew up together. A whole team grew up over 10, 15, 20 years, and there was no new hires because of crisis or of further efficiency. And if you do not have this new input and new question and let's say new blood, you obviously continue to do it the same way, and you are scared to do it a different way, as human beings are. If you go always the same way to work, you feel uncomfortable one day to go a different way because there is maybe a construction area. So you have to challenge yourself. And that is also, you mentioned that I said, when you feel too comfortable, change, because you grow with change and you have to develop till the end. Till your last day. And I think that is so very helpful if you have young people in your team, because they are curious, they love to learn, and they are open. And that hopefully also brings back some openness for the people who stop to learn that openness. Yeah. Mm. And it's maybe a German thing. I do not know if you know Goethe's Faust, but Goethe's Faust is about a scientist who wants to learn and learn and learn, who does a deal with the devil. And he said, and this deal with the devil is, should there ever be a second when I say, oh, please stay this moment because it's so nice, then I will die. And then I will go with you, devil. And this day finally never comes. So that's sort of maybe a role model for me. But I never did a deal with the devil.
Yeah, maybe that was my next question. What kind of deal did you do? No. I want to also focus a bit on the leadership part, because we have listeners that are in that moment of their career where they will take on leadership position, or they are already at the leadership level and they continue to grow from there. Prior to becoming the chief financial officer, What were some of the lessons that helped you reach this milestone in your career?
Well, I think, as I said, I was never an expert in anything. And I was quite mediocre in everything except communication and maybe bringing message to people. And I think it's so important for leadership to trust your people. A lot of them know more than you in their special field. And to delegate a lot. But at the same time, communicate the purpose and the target. Because if the people do not know the target, then of course they may do the wrong decisions and you won't even know about it. So that is one very important thing. And especially in modern times, there is no control and hierarchical model anymore working. So delegation and trust is very, very important. Transparency and communication. Don't hide things because they will find out anyhow. Mm. Of course, you have to do the same thing what you are asking from others. So if you are asking from others to save money, you better start with yourself. If you are asking others to have a good work-life balance and they shall go home early, then you better stay at the office till 8, because then everybody else will also stay at the office. So I told our CEO in Lufthansa, you have to go at 4 o'clock, because that's important to show people that it's possible to go at 4 o'clock and they don't have to feel bad about it. So be a role model for what you are asking for. And what else? Yeah, of course, listen. It's very important to listen to people to understand what they feel like. And maybe the last thing, try to build up diverse teams. For a leader, it's more complicated to have a diverse team, of course, because they may just have a struggle to find a common opinion. They may fight. And the leader then has to find a compromise, a solution, which everybody understands. But at the same time, to have the different opinions and the struggle, of course, normally brings a better solution. So to be an integrator and bring together a team, and it's quite good, the image of an orchestra or of a football team, yeah, where you have different talents. And the goalkeeper, of course, does something different than the person being in front, or the violinist does something totally different than the person at the percussion. But you have to bring them together to make it a good game or a good play. And that is a wonderful role. And you will never be the best violinist or the best percussionist, but you bring them together. And that is a great motivation for a leader, I think.
Mm, definitely, definitely. Well, you've shared some very great pieces of advice for both youngsters, young professionals, and also managers and people in leadership positions that maybe are just interested to know what is next for me, and definitely something to consider. I do want to continue by asking you about challenging situations and the way to approach challenging situations, especially when you start reaching those more political conversations, if you may. You must deal with many stakeholders and you really have to defend your area of expertise and explain your point of view. How do you recommend people to tackle challenging situations?
Be bold. Be bold and just go through the fire. You have to do it. As higher the hierarchy, as more of these situations you will have. Normally, you will have decisions where you never, ever, ever anybody will feel comfortable. Yeah. Normally, the decisions who reach the board level are decisions where you will maybe make some people happy, but also at the same time make other people unhappy. You have to make decisions like closing a location. I did close a location where I was in former times responsible for. So 400 people who did rely on me. And then I came back 10 years later and closed down this location. And that was really tough. That was really tough. And they hated me, literally. And they showed that to me. And then you have to, of course, I knew that before. You have to believe that you do the right decision. You have to go there yourself and explain, even when you know that they will at that time not understand. And you have to try to be fair, or you have to be fair as good as you can. Of course, nobody will think you are fair when you close a location and they are losing their jobs. Yeah. So you have to go into yourself, but you cannot avoid it. Because if you want to have a position like that and you want to do the best for the company as a whole, sometimes you have to make such a decision. And that is, again, you have to face that when you say, I want to have a top career. Because you cannot avoid this kind of decisions, and you can never, ever send somebody else to bring that message. Because if you do that, people know that you are a coward.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it seems that you yourself have been through some very challenging situations, and really thankful for sharing all of those learnings, because it must have not been easy. And like you said, you should also really believe that it's the fair thing to do. And people then do it because nobody else will do it for you.
Yeah.
Well, it is definitely a sensitive topic always to discuss, making hard decisions. But I'm very happy you covered it. I have a few minutes with you, and I do want to talk a bit about the societal changes that you have seen throughout your career, because I think a question that everybody listening to this interview wants to know is your opinion on the travel industry now with the pandemic. And what do you think will happen in the next year or a few years? And how do you think it affected the way we see the travel industry?
Oh, I think human beings are forgetting very fast. When I was with Lufthansa, we had Ebola and we had SARS. Both of that was not as bad as this pandemic, of course. But there were the crises. We had September 11th, where there was no flying. We had volcanoes where there was no flying. And everybody predicted that travel industry will go down on a longer notice. Of course, this is the longest crisis they were ever facing, and such a tremendous stop that is incredible, and I feel with everybody being in that industry, because it's so tough. But I don't believe that people will stop traveling. You already see that they are already wanting, even if it's dangerous, they want to travel. And I think it's good, because human beings should travel to meet other human beings and to understand what people in other parts of the world are thinking and experiencing that in person. So my strong belief is that there will be a fast start, and actually a lot of people, especially for private reasons, will travel a lot. So there will be a recovery. And I think you see that already in the share prices. And you see that already because they are planning already summer holidays. And you see that in parts of the world, it is already recovering. So there will be a recovery, and we will forget quite easy. The Spanish flu has been nearly crossed out of our historical knowledge. Because human beings don't like to think about crises like that. So I think there will be a recovery. The interesting part will be, of course, business travel will not be as big as it has been before. But that was only a question of time. There, the pandemic was an accelerator. But we discussed video conferencing as a risk factor for travel, business travel, for already a long time. So, of course, it was everybody knows now how it goes, how it works. And so that everybody is happy not to travel for an hour meeting for a whole day. So that will stop. Yeah. But I think that they are prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for covering that. I have two more questions that I want to cover with you. And one of them is about... looking at the airline industry, when you started your career and up to this date, when you started your professional career, the boardroom was filled with men and the airplanes had male pilots and female stewardess. Now the world is starting to look different. How do you see that the world has changed, and where is it going? the way we look at the industry overall?
Well, I would not first think about the gender, but I would first think about when I started in Lufthansa, we had paper tickets with coupons where every single coupon was for one route and it was all paperwork. And nobody could think about e-ticketing. And nowadays, you're just walking through with your mobile phone. So the technology really changed. Yeah. So the data, the question mark, the question of miles and more. So there is a lot of technical changes in the processes and to, and in the way flying works. We had wonderful meals, and now you are happy when you get a bottle of water. So again, something that changed. You came from a luxury experience to a bus driving experience. There is a lot of change regarding the gender, but still it's not enough. Lufthansa has one female board member, so that is not really big. And I think there may be 20% female pilots. So again, there is still a way to go before you have equality in gender. And maybe it will never come. The important thing is it will be more. And again, as I said, diversity should change. And I think the diversity that a company like Lufthansa has a lot more people with a migrating background is very important. I'm wondering, there is no international board member. Yeah. So it is an airline. It is an international airline with customers from all over the world. So this part of diversity for airlines seems to be very important to me, and it's not yet covered for all airlines, by the way. I think it's even worse for the American airlines. So I think that there is still a way to go. The interesting part is what did not change since I started, and it did not change, I think, that since more than 50 years, is the aircraft. So the interesting part, of course, is now, and that is the challenge, how do you do sustainable flying? Because airlines is not as bad as everybody said. Fashion industry puts a lot more bad things to the climate than the airlines do. But still, the airlines have to do their part. So we talk about synthetic fuel or a different way of flying. So a new technology challenge is there in front of us and in front of the airlines.
Mm. And are you optimistic about the future when it comes to technological change as well?
Absolutely. I'm invested in synthetic fuel. There is the technology for synthetic fuel is there. It is the investment, which is yet at the moment a little bit lacking. But I think it will definitely come. And with synthetic fuel, you can use the more or less the same engines as you have today, and you can be carbon dioxide neutral immediately. So that I'm very positive. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I recently talked to a female network from Lufthansa and asked them, are you confident and optimistic about the future of Lufthansa? They were all optimistic.
Well, that's good to hear from coming from your network and for the industry challenges, but also trends. I have a funny story to share that mentioning, you know, paper tickets and my experience with flying for the last few years as a millennial. I've never seen a paper ticket. It was always carton. So when I was given a paper, like it was a very thin piece of paper, and I thought that they don't understand that I need a ticket to go inside the plane because I had to change my flights, and they told me this is the paper, and I was like, it cannot be, it's too thin, like what is this? And then I asked them if they can send me an email so I have it on my phone, and they said there's no way to send you that, just take this one. And I remember feeling like, well, this is not right, something is wrong here, and you know, just making a comparison what you just share, we're so used to technology and having this sort of digital way into our lives that we forget we've come a long way.
Yeah,
we've come a long way.
And you know, in the past, when you lost this piece of strange paper, which was red at the backside, you were lost because you couldn't fly. Nowadays, okay, if you use your boarding pass, you have, as you say, you have it on your mobile and you can print another boarding pass. So what? But that is really a tremendous change in technology.
Yeah. I want to sum up our conversation. Thank you so much for giving us the time. This is really an honor, and I really am happy I covered everything I wanted to cover with you today. I want to ask you as a final question, what do you wish you knew at the beginning of your career?
I know that question, and I'm not sure if I have the right answer, because I think if I would have known it, I would have not learned it myself and make the experience on my own. So of course it would have been nice to know that there are some stereotypes and I have to overcome them, which I didn't believe at the beginning of my career. Or it would have been good to believe that if you have some bad luck or some things badly happen, which happened to me at my career, and somebody told me it's good for something. And at that time, I didn't want to know that it's good for something, because I said, oh, God, it cannot be. It feels so terrible. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if there is anything. I think it's always good to make the experience on your own.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure our listeners are really excited about hearing your career story and your advice. And I'm really applauding your work that continues after your professional career to interview female role models and share with the world that talent is universal.
At the same time, I have to thank you, because I think we are both parts of this whole thing, because you are also interviewing ladies and you are giving with your podcast such an inspiration for so many listeners. So I admire what you are doing, and it was an honor to be here. And I wish you all the best success with your career as well as your podcast. And of course, to all the listeners too.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for more updates from Female Role Models. I hope you felt inspired to take charge of your next career move. Remember to review this podcast and share your comments. Thank you.